Blog Talk Radio.
Crimewire, an elite team of veteran investigation experts, along with noted crime consultants and attorneys, often featured on the popular news programs for families of violent crime to find answers and seek justice. The Crimewire team, Vito Colucci Jr., private investigator and author, Denny Griffin, retired investigator and author, Tom Shamshak, retired chief of police and investigator, and Susan Murphy Milano, violence expert and author, are there on top of the crime, at the top of their game. Crimewire is a place for information, news, safety, and most importantly, justice. Our interactive website is www.crimewiresite.com. You can call in any time during the show. The number is 1-646-478-0982. And remember, you can participate in tonight's show simply by going to the live interactive chat room right here on Blog Talk Radio. If you are a friend or a family member, and you'd like to send the Crimewire team information on unsolved or suspicious death, and you'd like to be considered for a segment on a case for a future show, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com.
And tonight for our first segment, we're going back to Thursday, September 20th, 1984. Richard Hansen, age 52, and his 46-year-old wife Janice have been married for 23 years. The couple are wealthy and live in their dream home at 12754 Cedar Avenue in Aurora, Colorado, a home which Richard built. He also developed the subdivision where their home was situated. Lisa, Richard's 21-year-old daughter from a previous marriage, lives with them. Janice is a former model, having appeared in television commercials and various magazines and newspapers throughout the metro Denver area. Richard owns and operates a business as a land developer and builder. Earlier that day, a lawsuit against them was settled in their favor. After work, Richard and Janice stopped at a restaurant and stayed longer than usual to celebrate. They arrived home before 11. Janice had a headache and wanted to go to bed, but Richard was not ready to call it a night. He said, to retrieve a sports jacket he had left at the restaurant and wanted Janice to meet him at a different restaurant closer to their home, but Janice never showed up. Richard stated that when he returned home several hours later, he found Janice's lifeless body in their Mercedes convertible parked in the garage. Lights on, engine not running, and the strong smell of carbon monoxide in the air. The official manner of death is listed as undetermined. But Janice's son, John Hansen, believes his mother was murdered. He, with the help of his wife and other family members, is engaged in a battle to get the death certificate changed from undetermined to homicide, and his father declared the killer. And joining us tonight to talk about the death of Janice Hansen is her son, John Hansen. John, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And it's okay if I call you Johnny from time to time?
That is fine.
Okay. Now, you were in the Army when your mother passed. How were you notified? Who informed you of her death?
Our first sergeant called me out of the formation and called me into the office. And I had taken a phone call from my grandfather, whom is my dad's father. And basically he had informed me that my mother had passed away.
And did anyone tell you at that point the cause of her death?
You know, unfortunately they did not. They really didn't get a chance to. I had really taken it very hard. And at that point in time, it was the military's expense to send me home. And at that time that I did come home, during the preparation for her funeral and so forth, everyone in my family members had cried out that that he had killed their Janny. And that, you know, for not being there had hit me quite hard.
When did you first have anyone tell you what they thought happened to your mother? Do you remember how long after you were notified when you really started getting into the details?
I would have to say probably a good month or so from my one of my other sisters out of the five that I do have had basically informed me that she had committed suicide at that time.
So the death certificate was listed as undetermined, but there was speculation that it was a suicide?
That is correct.
When you talked to your father after you were notified of the death, what did he tell you happened? Did he have...
I remember this as if it was yesterday. We were driving in the car. I had been his chauffeur for that time frame, and I remember recalling to him and asking him, you know, Dad, what happened to Mom, you know? And I said, because, you know, everybody's saying that either you had killed her or that she had committed suicide. And at that point in time, I got an elbow in the side. And while I was driving, and he had asked me to never talk about this again.
Was that your real father, or was that your stepfather?
He is my real father.
Okay. And Johnny, can you give us a breakdown, too, so the listeners understand, including myself, how many brothers, how many sisters, whose step, who's full?
Sure. My father and his ex have five children, three girls, two boys. My mom and her ex had me and my two sisters, so a total of eight kids. And I'm being the only one of the true family member while during my mom and my dad's marriage, they had an affair and they had me.
So you explain have a lot what of... happened on that affair. Explain what happened. What? Because for the listeners, Richard is a planner, and your parents meet. They're both married to other people at the time. And explain what happens.
In case had turned that, supposedly when my mom had been applied for that position to model for my dad's homes, they then in turn had fallen in love and basically had me in that turn. And at the same time, there was a time that, my real father, my stepdad, had caught my mom and my father with another man in bed.
So at that point, John, then everybody ended up getting divorced so they could marry. Is that how it played out?
Yes.
And was your relationship with your father? I know you said that after your mother died, when you were out in the car, he elbowed you about not talking about this the matter again. But what had your relationship been up to that point with him?
You know, it was actually pretty good. I, you know, actually had finally spent some time with him to really, you know, get to know him a little bit better. Of course, you know, during that time frame, you know, they were still into alcohol and drugs. Not so much after my mom had passed. He had kind of slowed down a little bit, but we were constantly partying with one another, constantly flirting around with women as he had always done so in the past. And it was actually, you know, pretty good from my standpoint, because I really didn't have a really good opportunity to really spend that time with him as much as I had liked to. But at that point in time, you know, there was always a fear of him that I have always had of him just because of the way that he was abusive to everybody in the family.
So he abused everybody, not just one individual?
Yes, he was abusive to practically everyone in the family. The other two or three older kids on his family side I didn't really spend a lot of time with them as they were older and kind of off on their own. But the four kids that were in my home at that time, we were all abused, yes.
Wait, was
extremely
abused. Physically and
physically, mentally, sexually abused. In fact, my oldest sister on my mom's side, she had left and ran away at the age of 13 because one night they my sister had asked to go out with some friends. He wouldn't let her, so she turned on him and told my mom what he did to her, and that ended up being a brutal slaying that night. I recall I recall my dad literally dragging her by the hair down the hallway, beating her as they were going. Once she had the time to get away from him, my mom had kind of stepped in as much as she could, which she knew to kind of back off because of the way that he was. My sister then jumped out the window that night, and I didn't see my sister for years upon that time.
And was your father ever arrested for the abuse, or did anyone, like when you were just kids, was Child Protective ever called or that type of thing?
No, unfortunately back then in those days, you know, they weren't that strict, you know. I was beat up profusely from my father for on my birthday, just a quick one here, I got suspended from school. I came home, he beat me with a walking stick that was probably 5 feet high, inch in diameter around. By the time he got done with me, there was maybe 4 inches left of the stick. I went back to school that following 4 or 5 days after that, after my suspension, still had bruising on me. And, you know, the teachers just, you know, didn't even ask nothing as to why. And I was scared.
But, John, was it because your dad was so powerful, so well-known, do you think that had something to do with it?
That helped. That helped a lot.
I mean,
yes,
did everybody, what did people, when you guys were out and things, and if you went to church or did things, how did people treat your dad in the area that you lived in? Was they, you know, constantly, did they treat him with respect? Were they afraid of him?
I think both, Susan, because of, it was definitely both, because of the way that he conducted his business, and they knew that, you know, he was prominent in the area because of his, you know, developing of all of the developing of the homes that he has built. Him and my uncle probably built at least half of Colorado with several subdivisions as well as hotels, apartments.
Is your uncle still alive?
And so forth. Yes, he is.
Okay, and do you ever try to go to him and talk to him?
Yes.
After you, is he,
yes,
supportive of what you're trying to do as far as getting to the truth?
Yes. Yes, they could not stand that man. They felt that he was the devil. I kid you not. I mean, because of the way that he was, the way that he treated people. You know, don't get me wrong, you guys, I loved the man to a certain extent, as, you know, when he was a family man. But outside of the family man, when he would turn on you, it was like he was the devil.
Denny, is this kind of behavior, somebody like this, doesn't it sound like some of the people that you've written about in your mob books?
Yeah.
A little bit?
Yeah. Like two different personalities,
yep.
Two different people.
And you guys, that's how he conducted his business, you know. He didn't just go in there and conduct business, you know, across the desk. He went in and was very abusive in the way that he did business. Very influential. He knew as far as people backing him up, if they needed license or permits, you know, that they needed, all they had to do was go to whomever that they knew in those areas and got the permits like it was nothing.
But
it would take
him.
People
it was
years.
Just his behavior. He was angry.
Yep.
I mean, he was an upset man.
Yep.
I mean, he set up the person that your mom was married to before him. So he would catch her. So he was a plant. Because there's a question in the chat room, what would trigger him, the beatings. nothing triggers these offenders who are intimate partner homicide or intimate partner violence offenders. They do it because of power and control, and they do it because they can get away with it, and they feel that they have ownership. Right, Vito?
Yeah, that is true, definitely. I mean, that just, you don't need a certain trigger for that. Johnny, let me ask you this. In reading some of the details that Denny started the show with. So in other words, that day in question, a lawsuit against them was settled in their favor. So your mom and dad won this lawsuit. What, first of all, what was the lawsuit about, quickly?
That was actually between my uncle and my uncle's partner over an apartment complex. I don't know the complete details on it, but I know that somehow my uncle and his partner had kind of like got my dad out of it somehow.
Okay.
They kind of tried to cheat him out of some of the earnings that they were selling the complex for. And then my dad had found out about it, found out that he did actually try and sell it for an above amount that, you know, they were even trying to settle on. And then at that point in time, my father found out and then sued them for the remainder of the balance that was owed to him.
Okay.
And he won.
So now, you know, I'm sure, you know, being an ex-cop, that the police did question them since this death occurred on the same day that the lawsuit went against these other people, right? I'm sure the police must have interviewed them, right?
Yes. In fact, my aunt and my uncle both, you know, had tried to, you know, conduct their own type of interview and questioning of him as well, just because for the fact that, you know, they had a gut instinct that, you know, he either killed her or something, you know, besides of what had really happened that night.
Right. And now, second of all, they go out to a restaurant. They're kind of celebrating the victory of the lawsuit. They arrive home before 11 o'clock. Your mom says she has a headache and wants to go to bed, but your dad, Richard, he's not ready to call it a night, okay? Now, here's the interesting part. So he leaves to supposedly retrieve a sports jacket he left at the restaurant. Kind of reminds me a little bit of a case I spoke about a lot on television, the Robert Blake case, the guy from Beretta. If you remember, I believe, it's going back a while, but I believe he said he had to go back to the restaurant to do something or whatever. At the same time, I believe his wife was being killed, if I have the facts right. There's so many cases the three of us talk about, they kind of all blend in together. So, I mean, he goes back. So he goes home with her, and then he decides, oh, I'm going to go out some more. I'm not tired. We won the lawsuit, so let's go. And then he tells your mom to meet him at a different restaurant. I mean, all of that as to a police officer is going to sound very strange. You already celebrated. She says, I want to go home. I have a headache. I want to go to bed. He brings her home. Then he says, oh, by the way, I forgot my jacket, but meanwhile, you come and meet me at a different restaurant. How did the family, yourself and your sisters and brothers, what do you feel about that whole thing there?
You know, I had questioned that, you know, and I didn't even know what sucks about this whole thing is that I didn't even know about that until, you know, my wife and her sister started getting involved in this investigation. I mean, it made my jaw just drop because it was so many times it was conflicting reasoning as to where he went, what he did during that time frame, and how long he was gone. So, you know, once I had found that, I mean, I was just at awe and was in shock as to, you know, why would my mom even go into the car in the first place?
Right.
If she wasn't planning on meeting him. Okay?
And she's going to pick that night, a night of a victory in a lawsuit,
right,
to kill herself.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
And from what I heard from my other brothers and sisters was that they were actually fighting that night, which I don't doubt because of the alcohol. But at the same time, they're going out to celebrate. Why would they be fighting?
Does he move in another woman? How quickly does he move in another woman, or does he?
For me to recognize that, you mean as far as after that happened, or are you saying
during?
Yeah,
a relationship. How quickly does he start a relationship with somebody after your mom is dead?
Real quick. In fact, we had, at that time, we had two maids that were living maids that I knew weren't just for living maids. That tells you. And then he had met another girlfriend probably, you know, maybe a month to a month and a half later that he had spent time with her.
And Susan and Benny.
In fact, she moved in.
Oh, go ahead, John. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's fine. In fact, she had moved in, and she actually was living there at the same time that my sister and me both were living at that house.
And Susan and Denny, now, this is the point, not the point, but this is in the case where the detective who's questioning Richard, you know, looks across the table and says to him, okay, Richard, now let me understand this. You had a nice celebration at the restaurant, right? Oh, yeah, it was great. Okay, and you're happy, that lawsuit, that elephant's off your back, everything. Oh, yeah, it's great, you know, the whole bit. And so you want us to believe then that you're saying, wow, we won it, honey. Yeah, bring me home. I'm a little tired. And she goes home. You want us to believe that then she commits suicide right then, that night. I mean, see, this is when the police give the alleged suspect or person of interest. They give them that look and just say to them, what would make her want to do it that night? You know, that it doesn't make sense, right, Denny?
Or wait a minute. Why don't they check? But why don't they check and see if she's leaving him, if she's divorcing him? She was not happy with him. He was violent with her.
Right, right. Yeah, well, those are the things that, you know, the cops would need to know from the family or from Johnny's mom's best friends, maybe her sister, maybe her closest girlfriend. Those are the first things that the police want to know. In confidence, did she say, I got to get out of this marriage, I got to leave him, I got to do this, I've already told him I'm leaving him next month, you know, all those kind of things. So have you ever heard anything of that nature, Johnny, at all?
Yeah, I know, you know, I had tried to take my mom from him, you know, many, many, many times, and she was scared, you know, that he would come after her, and she did, or excuse me, and he did, and you know, one night he found her and beat the living crap out of her and almost killed her. So she knew at that point in time, even during that celebration, I know that for a fact that she had on her mind that it was time to get out of this relationship because of, you know, his doings, the way that he has been with her. I know she had contemplated that, but she was so feared of the man that there was no way that she would even attempt to do it. Because I've tried many, many times, you know, to take her away from him, and, you know, it's just the fear of him coming after her, as I would be now. Trust me, if he was alive and I was doing this, I would be feared for my life.
Johnny, let me, I want to raise a couple more issues about your father's account of that evening. But first, I think you just mentioned that if he were alive, we ought to let the listeners know that your father has since died himself. Am I correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Now, I found this very interesting. I'm sure our listeners will also, that the first account from your dad about that night was that he had dropped your mother off at the house, then returned to this first restaurant to retrieve a sports jacket he had left. Well, as it turns out, he later changed that story. It was a credit card he had left, not a sports jacket. And then when he was questioned about that, to establish the alibi that he was actually in that, had gone back to that restaurant, he tells the police, well, he drove back to the restaurant, but he never went in. He sat outside. Then the story comes out in another version that he didn't go to that restaurant at all, that was garbage. He had actually gone to a private club, and when the police officer asked him to identify that club so his alibi could be checked, he refused to name the club and said it was none of the officer's business where he was. And then he took three polygraph exams and failed all three.
That's correct.
Is that correct?
That is correct.
Good point, Denny. Good points.
If there weren't red flags beforehand, they're damn sure were that. And this is all relatively soon. Like, the report I'm referring to was dated October 11th. So it was within just a couple of weeks or 3 weeks of your mom's death that the police then were and you know what? I don't understand. Maybe Vito or Susan can help me out here. But it seems like, there were a lot of reasons to think Richard may have known something or been involved. And I don't know, do you know, Johnny, was there ever like a grand jury convened where your dad would have had to have been called to testify under oath, or other people would have been called in or anything? Or were these things just kind of let slide?
No, they let slide.
Plus, it was ruled undetermined. So it wasn't.
Right.
If it was ruled a homicide, you know, that would be different. But you've already kind of moved things out. Nobody ever asked it, so it's undetermined, and nobody's even going any further with it. It's it.
Yep.
Now, Jenny,
I mean, I find Vito and Denny. I find it very interesting that I'm not trying to slam anyone here, but we had the doctor scheduled to come on the show. And he had something else to do. I just think that there's so many things about this that really deserve attention in Colorado. Attorney General, the investigator, you know, all of these people suddenly to not support this, to not come forward. I know this is an election year. This has nothing to do with this. There are more unanswered questions, as Danny always says, than answers. And in this whole case, all anybody wants to do, what the family wants to do, is to seek the truth. And when people back off, as they have this past week, Denny and Vito, you know, it makes us wonder, because we see these all the time. And that says everything. That speaks volumes. All anybody wants to do is to have this reinvestigated properly. There is enough information, enough evidence that they need to open up the case. The Attorney General does. And the county coroner, and, you know, for them not to come forward today, or, again, at the last minute, cancel out on the show, Denny.
I certainly wish the coroner could have been here, because one thing, Johnny, that you're trying to accomplish, you and your family, is to get the death certificate changed from undetermined to homicide, and the case reexamined. And I understand now there's a lot of confusion, that some people are saying that the Attorney General's office is looking at it. They kind of deny they're looking at it. They said, no, not us. The medical examiner, or the coroner, seems sympathetic to a degree. He'd love to change the death certificate, but he needs more information. And it's another one of these deals, if nobody's investigating it.
Yeah, I mean,
waiting for the police to contact him and say, hey, we got this new information. It looks like a homicide. It looks like it's going nowhere. Is there the confusion about who's investigating, if anyone, that I sense, or is everything running smoothly?
No, it is not running smoothly. We keep getting stonewall after stonewall after stonewall. I mean, we get so close to thinking that people are, you know, going to help us with this. And then all of a sudden, we have no contact, no communication. It just stops dead, just like you saw tonight.
Well, and the coroner, again, he's running for re-election. I mean, I'd love to be able to write some stuff. Yeah, okay.
Yep.
And we, you know, blogs are very powerful, and so is the show. Nobody is threatening or intimidating anything. Saying is give they're listening to the show, they're listening. If they're not listening right now, they're listening tomorrow. All anybody wants to do, and I would suggest that the coroner and the attorney general and the sheriff there, they Google all three of our names, Denny Griffin, Vito Colucci, and Susan Murphy Milano. Really, Google us to see what we're capable of as far as putting the pressure on this, because we will. So if they go in, even though all the parties are not here anymore, there should be enough evidence, Vito, shouldn't there? With what there is in this case, hopefully they preserved it, because it's an undetermined case. Would they preserve the evidence back then?
Oh,
well, not
sure,
only
yes.
That, Susan, can I reiterate on that? Because we had asked for the evidence that they had taken, and they placed it in a box. In fact, I have all the pictures that I passed over to you guys that shows that evidence. And then when we had called on it, yeah, they had it stored. They had a certain number that were filed to it. And then we had called, like, I don't know, a week or 2 weeks later. Then they're saying that, no, that evidence has been destroyed.
You can't be pregnant here. Either you have evidence or you don't.
Exactly. And you know they never throw that stuff away. It's always stored.
And, Johnny, we're running out of time, and I want to get this point in very quickly. I want to run it by you and get your comment. Is it true that during the research your family has been doing that a former investigator through email said that this case was covered up? It was
yeah.
a corrupt investigation. It was covered up, and he had names and reasons and information on the whole deal, and he would only talk to the AG's office or the FBI. And it's my understanding that that information, his information, was passed on to the Attorney General and the FBI, and neither agency has contacted this man.
That is correct.
Wow.
Can I also reiterate, too, that my father never went to my mother's funeral? Didn't even go. Didn't even have the...
Well, you know why? He doesn't need to. I mean, he's like, you know, look at all of these other people that we've had on. Look at the cases that are coming up now across the country. You've got Sean Paniers in Kansas City, you know, for allegedly killing his wife. They have not found her. You've got coming up, you know, at some point, Drew Peterson for allegedly killing Kathleen. That's wife number three. Nobody's found wife number four. You've got so many of these cases. And yet, you know, again, all these things, this is 1984, this is 2011, with technology and forensics, they should be able to go ahead and do this. Maybe it's that because he's gone, they don't want to malign his wonderful name because he's done so much for the town and put so much food on people's table. But
yep.
this is a murder. This is a clear-cut murder, and they need to do their jobs. And you said that the Attorney General is running for re-election? Is he doing that now?
Yes.
Okay. Well, he should be going to my blog probably in about 10 days. I'm going to, if we don't hear from him 10 days from today, that we will start advocating for certain things to be done on the blogs and on other shows that we have. We just don't have this show. We have four or five other shows that we do or we are all part of every week. We'd be happy to mention his name. I'm not going to do that tonight, Denny and Vito, but I think we all agree that if 10 days from today, if we don't hear anything, we'll start to put, you know, the word out that I don't know that I would want somebody in office again. And perhaps if you or your wife hear back from these people in that office, that they will keep us apprised, and so we will know what's going on.
I have a correction on for the Attorney General. I believe it is just the coroner that's going up for re-election. Sorry.
Okay. All right. But the coroner is as well, and he's voted in by the people. So either way, everybody that's involved,
that's
we're more than happy to mention their name. So they have 10 days.
Okay.
Johnny, we'll keep in touch on this. And would you be willing to come back on at some point in the future, or as Susan said, one of the other shows that we're involved in to keep us updated?
Most definitely, you guys, because I'm not going to finish until before I die, because I want this case taken care of for my mom. I really do.
That's right. It's about justice for your mom.
That's right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you,
guys. I really appreciate you looking into this for us, and please stay in contact. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Johnny. God bless you.
Thank you. You too.
Okay, moving on to our second case. Brutally raped and murdered, Brittany Phillips will never get the chance to experience her mother's warm embrace again. While away at Tulsa Community College, Brittany and her mother, Margaret Zingman, regularly talked every Monday and Thursday. These weekly phone calls would soon end the night a police officer knocked on Dr. Margaret Zingman's door to inform her that her daughter had been raped and murdered. For Brittany's mother, such violence against her daughter is all too familiar. She says, "All my work did not prepare me for the events of September 30th, 2004. As a psychologist at Mabel Bassett Correctional Center and a trauma therapist for 17 years, Dr. Margaret Zingman could never imagine her personal experiences and work with other victims would run parallel with the death of her daughter." We'd like to welcome tonight Dr. Maggie Zingman to CrimeWire. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you.
First thing I'd like to say to you, Doctor, is in reading your story here, I'm very impressed with what you have done, and I'm going to have you explain this in a minute, how you've gone literally across the country over and over again with your own money, with your own days off that you've been able to accumulate to try to get the word out on this case. Why don't you tell our listeners across the country a little bit about that, what you've tried to do. This case is not even 7 years old, and what have you done through that time?
Right. Well, at about year two or three, when we started, we have DNA, and when we started ruling out 400 and 600 and 800 suspects, and I was passing out flyers in Tulsa where she was murdered, but I just felt like I had to do more. And I know some people see this as unbelievable what I'm doing, but I really felt like I had no choice, like Brittany was pushing from behind, because if you don't get national coverage, I didn't know Susan then, I really had no national voice. And so I had somebody who offered to wrap my car, because I had little posters all over my car.
Explain what that is, Maggie. Explain the wrapping of the car.
A wrap is actually literally a wrap. They design through computer design and photographs, they design something on vinyl, and they actually have adhesive, and they cover the car with it. A lot of people think it's painted on, but actually our wrap is made up of photographs and information, and it has "Caravan to Catch a Killer" written all over it. So when people drive by, they know what the car is talking about, and it's literally peeled off a backing and wrapped and covers the doors, the windows. There's holes in it so you can see out through the windows, but people can't see the holes because they're so small. And it's just a way of having actually a moving billboard with even our website big enough that people can see. So, you know, no matter where I am, and especially when I'm traveling across the country, people can at least see the Brittany Phillips murder website address. And if I'm stopped at a light, I have people asking me questions, or at a rest stop. And then I do media stories in every city I stop in. You know, it's just a way that, I mean, our Detective Jeff Felton works nonstop on this, and I'm real lucky because I've heard some horror stories. But, you know, we've ruled out so many people. They're still looking at Tulsa, but they're really beginning to feel that because we've ruled out so many people that had any connection, even those that don't, that our killer must be elsewhere in the United States. And it's the only way I felt like I could get her story out there and also make people aware that, you know, like he said, I'm a trauma psychologist. I'm a survivor myself. Brittany knew self-defense. But really, without the law change, I mean, we lose more and more daughters and sons and family members, you know, to these predators who are allowed to stay out, you know, and hurt our children. So, I mean, I've covered probably 43,000 miles, and I think I've had about 76 reporters in 40 states. You know, and that's just the drop in the bucket. But I just feel like if I don't do something like that, her story is going to go cold. And I may never find her killer, but like the man was saying before me, I'm going to do this till the day I die, you know, both trying to change the laws and trying to find her killer, because I know she would be doing that for me. So.
Right. Margaret, let me ask you, when this occurred, when this murder occurred, where were you living yourself?
I had just bought a house about 3 months before then in Chandler, which is about maybe 50 miles west of Tulsa. And Brittany, I call her Brittany, had just come back from being away at college in Florida for a whole year and had moved into an apartment we thought was safe because it was right next to the high school she graduated from. So, you know, she had been away at school for a year. I didn't think anything about her renting an apartment, you know, next to her high school. I had already gotten used to having her way far away from me. And we had never heard any problems at this apartment during the 4 years she was at high school there. I mean, I learned otherwise that how the apartment keeps a lot of things quiet, which is a whole nother problem, because if we had known
what we
know.
Was it on campus?
Then,
was it on campus?
No. Yeah. It was just its apartment complex that's just next to the high school. The high school is just, you know, a day school that, you know, and it's in a, you know, a decent part of town. And again, we had never heard about attacks or rapes or anything there, because especially if they don't go through the police or they don't get investigated, the apartment complex doesn't feel they have to tell anybody. They didn't tell anybody, they still don't, about her murder there.
Well, let me give a little background on Tulsa.
Okay.
I'm sure you've done this on your own, Doctor, but I have a daughter, a son-in-law, and five children that have been in Tulsa for close to 20 years. They are in the process of leaving Tulsa, okay, sometime hopefully within 6 months to a year. The Tulsa, first of all, has had one of the worst gang situations out of any city in the country. They're known for that. That has been going on for several years. Like my daughter says, no offense to the other part of Oklahoma, but Oklahoma has a severe oh-boy network. Okay?
Oh, God, yes.
And you know, I mean, we've talked about it numerous times on our show, and Susan and Denny can tell you, and I always use the caption, Oklahoma is not okay, just because of everything that seems to go on there. So I know firsthand. I was out there a few months ago visiting my daughter, and I just really shook my head. And I just said to my daughter, who's named Kimmy, Kimmy, I said, I don't know how you take it here. This is the most ridiculous place I've ever seen to live. And you know, that's how I feel about it. So first of all, they have a severe problem with crime there, okay, that they've had for many years, even, you know, 7 years ago when this happened to your daughter and well beyond that. So, you know, to kind of put it to rest and say, well, we're not really pursuing anything or we don't have anything to go on, there's so many opportunities out that way to solve crimes, you know.
Right, right. And really, that's partially why I say I'm lucky, because I do talk to people, even here in Tulsa, you know, and surrounding counties especially, where you really see the old boy network. I mean, I've heard of a lot of horror stories, but our detective and the head of homicide refused to call the case cold. They keep turning over things. But it's rare in Tulsa, and it's rare in Oklahoma City, and it's rare in Oklahoma. You know, I would totally agree with that.
But because of what you've been doing, men, you know, Denny, I don't know that I've ever even heard of this. Men have been tested for her murder because of what this mom has done.
Yeah, it's tremendous. And I certainly want to commend you, Doctor, for your focus and your dedication to your cause. It's just tremendous. And we, you know, on a weekly basis and in between, we talk to people, families who have lost loved ones to violent crime, and it's a tough thing to keep out there and keep at it when you meet failure and so forth. But those successes, when you're able to succeed and advance that case, get something done, thankfully I haven't experienced that, but I can only imagine that as a family member who's lost a daughter, it's got to be, even if it's not conclusive, at least that you're out there doing something and are scoring some successes, getting people tested, getting the word out. That's got to motivate you and keep you going. Am I correct?
Oh, yeah. I mean, to me, you know, in some ways I have no choice. But when I go out on caravans or when I'm doing anything, educating police about what they have to think about or you know, finding a tip or something, I mean, it energizes me. I mean, and, you know, even ego-wise, it keeps Brittany's memory alive. I mean, you know, thousands upon thousands know her now. And, you know, you either go crazy, and if you do that, then the memory gets lost too. So for me, it's sort of a way that she still rides beside me, and I don't ever expect closure. I mean, I know in many ways, even if we find the killer, that's not going to bring me closure because it can't bring her back. But I feel like, you know, she was going to make a lot of changes in the world. She was a chemistry major. She, you know, was wanting to go into cancer research, and I feel like in just some little way along with me, you know, she's already made changes.
But it's not some little way. I mean, you're trying to get every state to do a DNA test upon arrest for you know, blowing your nose the wrong way. I mean, that's what you're trying to do. And that's that in of itself. I mean, it's going to change things.
Well, the frustrating thing is that when we wait to conviction, historically rapists don't get convicted the first five times they're arrested. So if you're waiting to conviction to take their DNA, when we finally catch a lot of these predators, you match their DNA backwards over 20 years, and they're called preventable crimes. I mean, I bet when we find Brittany's killer that this monster probably has been through the system. Just today I heard of somebody who is already listed on the sexual offender. He got just probation, and within a year, almost every city I hear the same story, but within a year, just in Tulsa, you know, he had offended again. And I think part of it is, you know, not just the lawmakers and the police, but educating these judges. I actually think there's some lawmakers in Oklahoma who are trying to actually sue the judges, you know, and somehow connect them to the crimes when these offenders, you know, go ahead and do something 1 year after being slapped on the hand for, you know, rape and all these other, you know, crimes that just take away part of the life or all the life of our family members.
And not only that, Margaret, what's the exciting news is that across the country each day, literally thousands of people are added to this DNA database.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? A lot of states are joining in. I don't know the amount. Maybe somebody like our Special K can
25.
Call me.
Can,
how many?
Well, there's 20. I don't know if you were talking about the 20, states, but there's 25
how many states?
States now.
Oh, good. I was just going to ask one of our people to check on that this week. But 25 states. Okay, so half of the states do this. Man, we need to have all of the states doing this. That's for darn sure. That's horrible. A case that had lingered in Connecticut for a while. A man was killed, shot in the head, and his car was set on fire. When his car was set on fire, they set the car on fire to get rid of evidence. When the car was set on fire, it blew up and knocked a baseball cap off of the suspect that sent it a good distance away. The chief of detectives kept checking the database once a month to see if anything new was added. It went on and on. 6 months went by, a year went on, a year and a half, whatever, until the subject finally was arrested on another matter, and bingo, the DNA, they found his DNA, and it matched, and he's sent away for 40 years now. So that's what we need on this. But 25 out of 50, Margaret, is not a good percentage. I didn't know it was that low.
Here's the other problem, though. And this is true with DNA at conviction, but even more so with arrest, is we're getting it passed, but unfortunately, one, half of the time we're not getting the funding, and they won't fund to have more analysts. So you still have the backlogs sometimes from 3 months to 6 years. And so, you know, we maybe have somebody in prison for a minute, and then they get lost. So, and then two, there's not a lot of sharing between the FBI database and maybe like the Army or stuff. So, I mean, there's still a lot. I mean, yes, each step we get is better, but, you know, there's so much more. I mean, because I still think people think this only happens to certain types of people who get murdered. You know, it's somehow their fault or something. They don't think it's going to happen. I've had a number of DAs across the U.S. say to me, you know, unfortunately, it's going to have to be some of these lawmakers who have something happen in their family to where they finally get it. Because in Oklahoma, we fought for 2 years to try to get a bill passed. And this year, when we tried to push it in the Senate, the head of the committee that it was supposed to be debated in wouldn't even let it come to committee this year.
I have an idea that I think would work.
No, but here, if Denny and Vito and Margaret, look at what if we took – If maybe Kim Colton or some other people could start contacting, like, Morgan Harrington's parents, we go state by state on these unsolved cases where there is DNA, and we hook them up with this, with you, Maggie. And there's strength in numbers, because there's all these cases across the country that they do have the DNA, but they don't have the person. And then if they do the same thing, and you do it that way, and you network this, then the chances of all, you know, a good portion of you catching the killer, because they know what if they can duplicate what you're doing there and take some of that burden there as well, and then, you know, you all exchange the information because the Harringtons are in Virginia or somebody else is in Wisconsin. So why don't, I think we just came up with something born here on CrimeWire. Why don't we do that?
I think it's great because I'm, you know, just from my traveling, I have connected with a couple of groups. You know, one is the Surviving Parents
Coalition.
It's
not the groups. It's not the groups. And that's not where you're going to get this.
No,
this
but
is
let me,
where you're going to get this is from the families themselves. Like I said,
that's,
the Harrington.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, but
yeah,
the Surviving Parents is part of, is made up of families. Families who still have people missing, families who still have the unsolved murders. This is a, and that's where, actually, they were all individual parents going to the government, going even to Washington, D.C., and because they kept running into each other there, they figured out that there is strength in numbers, and that's where we've gotten some of the states to pass. So the more families that we get connected this way, it is more powerful. That's what we need. You know, the groups.
And each
that
time that you know that there's a murder somewhere and you have somebody, you know, you've got a lot of, I think you do anyway, capability with interns at some level out where you are or through the people that you've met across the country, start gathering some of those interns and ask them to reach out to these parents. Every time there's a crime, there's a murder, let them know who you are, what you're doing, so that they, again, can in turn get them in the state to advocate, because these families have, they have no hope. And, you know, even with the Harrington, Morgan's been gone since, what, January of 2010. They found her body. She was in a Metallica concert, went missing, and they allegedly have DNA from her crime scene. So many of these, and also because it might do something, I don't know, Vito or Denny, if this is true, but wouldn't it prompt perhaps looking at the DNA a little bit more quickly, because they always say that the stuff is so backlogged on these crimes that when they find the bodies, you become strength in numbers. You know, I never thought years ago with domestic violence or stalking, people would say to me, who cares? You know, a lot of things have changed in 20-some years. A lot of people are alive because of my mom.
One of the first questions I think now we should ask everybody when we prepare them for Crime Wire is, does your state have a DNA database? I think that would be a great question for us to know every time we start a show with any subject.
Yeah.
I mean, it came to mind, the same thing you said, is that something that maybe we could put our energies in and to try to get that changed and maybe be advocates for that on those other 25 states?
Great.
And number two, Denny, the ones that don't, like, you know, here, like Margaret says, the doctor says, Oklahoma, this comes up before everybody. Denny, it never even gets any place. What's the reasoning, Denny, why this doesn't go to committee and be put across? This solves murders, thousands of murders.
Here's part of it, and the thing that we also have in our power is facts, is that you have groups that are arguing against invasion of privacy, First Amendment rights. But we have the argument, and it's even been to court cases where they've proven it doesn't. But when you go to the masses, some of these people are fighting against it. You know, start arguing these vague terms, and every time we start switching people's minds when we come up with the facts, when we show...
These are criminals, Margaret.
I know. Well, and that's what I argue, but I'm also, you know, it's taking a lot of people, and I think the more we can connect people, like with this idea, the more power we have.
Why don't we put a spot on the Crime Wire forum and make it just for this, and then we'll start gathering the numbers, and we'll start, you know, when a state or a city or a county comes on, we'll put it on, you know, and we'll keep score publicly, and keep it out there. This way, you have a place to go look as well, and be interactive with the folks across the country on these crimes. Because, you know, you work a lot just to go do this across the country.
Yeah, and, you know, part of it, too, is a lot of us, part of, you know, family members, if we can, we try to get into these, you know, these houses and the Senate and testify in front of the committees if they allow it, you know, because we want them to hear our story. We want them to hear the sadness. We want them to hear the horror of, you know, finding out that, like, my daughter was in her apartment for 3 days because I thought she was late at school, and this person, you know, just left her there, you know. And so I think we have to bring the stories home, and the more we can get families involved, you know, and really not letting people sort of hide their, you know, ears and eyes from what's going on, that it can happen. I mean, I always start off with, you know, this is the girl next door. Brittany could be your daughter if these laws don't change. And it's trying to get our lawmakers to understand that this is your wife, this is your mother, this is your husband. This could be anybody because of the way these laws allow. You know, I work at a female prison. The ladies get, you know, and they need to serve time. But we have ladies who get 20 years for bad sex, and yet I keep hearing of rapists getting 2 or 3 years. You know, it's just crazy. But
you know, Denny Griffith, do you agree with me? I feel that if Oklahoma had a DNA database, I think this case would have been solved quite a while ago, and I think if they had one now, this case would be solved right away. Do you agree with me?
I certainly think there's an excellent chance of that, Vito. And getting back to Susan's suggestion about the networking and strength in numbers, I think that other Oklahoma issue, the medical examiner's issue, was a good illustration of people getting together and putting the pressure on. And that can produce results.
Look at what we did
I know
there.
We're talking about doing
that was
it.
Amazing.
State to state to state, but Oklahoma, we've already had experience with of trying to get people who wouldn't let stuff out of committee and those types of issues.
Yeah.
So it can be done. They can be forced. And Doctor, if I could, I'm just curious, as you go about in your travels, what's the overall reception you receive? For example, I'm sure it varies by location, but are generally, is your message well-received? Are people saying, oh, why don't she go away? You know, she's causing trouble.
I mean,
she's trying to get us to do something we don't really want to do.
It's really interesting because in talking to the public and in talking to media, you know, everybody seems surprised that, you know, there are these problems with DNA. All I do is send an email a day or two before I get to a city, and breath even, the media is always picking it up. People will stop me in the cities and talk to me. I mean, it's unbelievable. Sheriffs, I mean, a lot of people are behind this, you know, and so, you know, it's just trying to keep that, you know, interest up. You know, after I leave, you know, I try to stay in contact, but the reception has been unbelievable. I mean, I'm always in awe just at how open people are. It's, you know, getting them to then energize to get their lawmakers, because everybody seems to, you know, say, yeah, I agree. And then I hear stories of other families with unsolved murders and stuff. And, you know, it's not only in Oklahoma, you know, per chance if our killer is elsewhere, it's trying to get this across the U.S. And there is a move for a federal law. I mean, it's stalling a little bit, but there's a lot of families pushing for that right now, too, to just make it mandatory, you know, for all states. You know, to be having.
And
to be
Doctor, I'd like just like to comment. You mentioned a couple of times that you consider yourself lucky to have your detective, you know, on the job here and really working. And you know, I wouldn't have thought till we started Crime Wire, because most people assume that every single police department, every single cop, is you know, is gung ho and wants to get to the bottom of everything and is out there 24/7 virtually working on these cases. Unfortunately, we found that that isn't true in every case. Vast majority of cops, yes, there are exceptions.
Yeah.
And to me, anyway, hearing you say that you have a cop who seems to care and be out there is a tremendous asset, because we talk to people all the time who have not only the loss they're fighting, but they also are fighting the police agencies trying to get them to do something. So it is really a major thing and something to be thankful for, that you have a cop that's really on your side.
Yeah, it is, because, I mean, I hear probably as many horror stories as you do. I mean, it's very rare. Our relationship is more the exception than the rule, sadly, you know. I totally agree with that. You know, I just wish there was a way to change that. And, you know, I try to change that in talking with police departments all across the U.S. But, you know, again, it's more places in Oklahoma have the old boy network, you know, and or the sort of discounting as to, you know, that it's just occurring because of where that person was. So I feel very lucky.
Dr. Maggie Zimmern, we're out of time. Thank you so much. To the
Thank
Crime Wire
all.
Team, our Director of Research, Kim Colton, the Public Relations Team at ImaginePublicity.com, Our next show will be Tuesday, May 10th, 2011. Tune in as we continue to analyze cases, crimes, and interrupt and wreak havoc on families looking for answers and seeking justice.
Thank you for joining us tonight on Crime Wire. We always welcome your support and value you as our guest. If you would like your case to be featured on Crime Wire, email us at thecrimewire@gmail.com. Or to hear a rebroadcast of tonight's show, go to www.crimewire.blogspot.com. Turn on the volume at your computer and the show will automatically play.
Remember, we ensure that your voices will be heard when there is nowhere else to turn. Visit our website at www.crimewiresite.com. God bless from the Crime Wire team, Vito Colucci Jr., Denny Griffin, Tom Shamshak, and Susan Murphy Milano. Thank you and good night.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.